Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is the 22nd of October, and let me introduce our panel to you, and we will get to the many riveting topics that we have to discuss. And as I say, riveting. Rosemary is yawning.
I am stuck to my chair.
There you go. Thank you. Alan Shartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
How do you do?
I am fine. Thank you. Political consultant Libby Post joins us.
Hello.
Good morning. Very nice to have you back. And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
Good morning. So let us begin. Remember, we always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. I have a lot of good stuff to talk about. We'll start with the passing of Ben Bradlee, supervised the Washington Post's exposure of the Watergate scandal that led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, and being called this morning the quintessential newspaper editor. Ben Bradlee passed away yesterday at the age of 93.
No, I don't think there's any question about it. He was. I mean, you know, he was probably the only person that is probably better known to the American people than Ben Bradlee as a newspaper editor. Okay, gang, I'll test you. Who?
As a newspaper editor?
Yes,
no, as an editor. No one.
I'll give you a hint. Of a major metropolitan daily.
Well, anyone at the New York Times. No.
We love
I don't think so. Anyone at the New York Times and probably the
but they're not better known.
Yeah, but and yeah, the Sulzberger name is publishing.
No, the answer is Perry White.
Oh, the Metropolitan.
Metropolis.
Here's the thing about Ben Bradlee that struck me. Yes, he was a quintessential newspaper editor, and his time is so far gone. I mean, his day was 50 years ago, and that means the day of newspapers was 50 years ago. It was Watergate. And everything he built at the Washington Post is basically washed away. That's paper is only a shadow of itself. Mm-hmm. The kind of investigative reporting he does is not being done at major dailies anymore. And there's one other thing, too, is that we're remembering all the good things as we should. Watergate was an amazing story. But Ben Bradlee was also responsible for Janet Cook, the hubris of the editor with that much power at that time led to some real problems.
How did he know that
he hired her? He hired her. Okay. He was struck. Okay. He hired her, number one, and number two, as he accepted Woodworth, who was the editor on that story, his word that no, we really don't need to know who the sources are, even though other reporters at that paper were saying this story can't be right. You need to check it out. He said, no, we're fine. They weren't fine.
Okay, so what? They weren't, and you're right. But one story is. Deprecates the entire.
No, it doesn't.
Thing. No, but Watergate, just as Watergate builds him up for a great lesson that we've all learned from, so should Janet Cook. You know, he has a legacy in both ways.
Well,
he also was responsible.
I think his legacy is much stronger on the journalistic side of uncovering stories. And, don't stick your tongue at it,
because you don't know it all. I know this history. He also is responsible, Libby.
Yes.
He's also responsible for covering up a lot of the stuff that we should have known about JFK, because he was very good friends with
he
JFK.
He says he didn't know.
Well,
he said he didn't know about the woman on
that him. Didn't.
He said that would have been
none
very
of the reporters. None of the reporters in that day and age in the 60s would have uncovered that story, because they were all complicit in behaving the exact
uncovered
same
is such a great
way.
Word.
Right.
Yeah. That if he's happen. A hot investigative editor, that's the kind of story you uncover.
It doesn't matter, because it's about the time that it happened. I'm not excusing it, but this kind of coverage didn't change until Gary Hart. And at the same time, more women were in becoming journalists and being covering the news instead of just the
style. You don't think it's because there were
section.
Women, Libby?
I think it's a combination.
There were no women involved in either Gary Hart or any of the
That's what it was.
But I think Gary Hart made all the difference in the world when he said, follow me, or supposedly said, follow me.
Actually, the New York Times had another major story about that 2 weeks ago, and he never said
until after
they were actually there following him. So it's very suspect. And no woman was involved in any of the scandal stories. Monica Lewinsky was all men. So was Donna Hart. I don't think, I of course feel very strongly about women being involved in investigative reporting, but we have not played a role in the way politicians are covered.
No, but you have to recognize that just having more women in the newsroom, I think, changes the tenor and the perspective that the guys aren't can't automatically just protect one another.
But you don't think this is why it was done. I'm so sorry, and I know I'll be attacked viciously for this, but I think that the press is always interested in how much they can get away with. In the old days, Roosevelt, you know, they carried right. him all around right. and nobody was allowed to say
right.
it. Women, Kay Summersby with Eisenhower, and people knew about that and knew what their consequences, but they didn't do anything. But the salaciousness is what brought it over, I think. In other words, this is a great way to sell papers, and we're going to do it from now on. And if we don't do it, then our cousins at the National Enquirer or the other people
the will. That's just too easy. I don't know of any reporter who thought, oh, I'm going to cover this to sell papers. You cover it because you're a news person.
But nobody got told no. That's the
point.
And
you want it. You want to tell it.
But everybody,
wrong.
But there was this sense of, look,
well, don't they go together?
Actually, studies show that what really sells newspapers are things like putting your kids' pictures and graduation stuff.
Well, sure.
And also the other thing are disasters, when a spaceship blows up.
I'm just going to slightly try to bring this back to the subject that we started to Ben Bradley.
What is that about?
My apologies in trying to do this. But so let's talk about Watergate. Obviously, that's the story, and that is what's selling papers, but then there is also the journalistic drive that is getting you there, yes?
Watergate was interesting because it came out. That story was virtually all out by the time the elections came around, and Richard Nixon won by the biggest margin ever at that time. So what is the effect of investigative reporting? What really happened was that congressmen and senators read that story, and they are the ones who picked it up, which is the way democracy...
That's the way it works.
That's the way democracy is supposed to work.
Right, that's the way it's supposed to work. The newspapers aren't going to be able to impeach a president, but they play a role in uncovering the reality of the situation. Yes, Alan?
I'm just holding up my hand because one of the things I read somewhere, and I'm sure you guys will know about this, is that when it was disclosed who Deep Throat was, remember that most of these newspapers have rules. And among the rules are that if you're using an unnamed source, the editor has to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Correct.
And Bradley said he didn't know.
Correct. And that bit him you know where when Janet Cook came along. And here was a young woman who he was much enamored of, who was saying there's an 11-year-old crack addict in the city. His father or stepfather is feeding him. Yeah. And all the reporters.
She made it up just in case somebody did.
She totally made it up. And other reporters, very good reporters at the paper, said this can't be true. No crack dealer would risk his business by inoculating, a kid with it. You get in trouble that way. And Bradley did not ask to know. And Woodworth, who was one of the Watergate reporters, was the immediate editor on that. So the two of them, thinking of Deep Throat, they did it right, so they assumed that Janet Cook did too, and they did not monitor that story.
Right.
It went on to win a Pulitzer Prize, and that's when it was all exposed.
Well, you made that point eminently clear, Rosemary, about Janet Cook. Now returning to yesteryear, returning to Ben Bradley, it is interesting.
Story.
Think of the best thing that ever happened to Ben Bradley, culturally.
Jason Robards.
Yeah,
well,
true.
To some degree, I think you're right. To the other degree, Lou Grant.
Because
as you know, Mrs. Pinchone, who's had this very
Kate
good
Graham.
Relationship
I mean, that was I love that show, and it really showed this gruff guy and this patrician woman, and that's what you had between Bradley and Katie Graham. And she really was, and when you think about the ability for him to do his job, she's the one who pushed the button and said go for it and do it.
I think they were very much a team. She had the power, but she didn't have the experience, and he worked with her to guide it. That Watergate, I cannot take away. It was an immensely important story for our democracy, and it changed investigative reporting. The idea
changed
of following the money came from that. The idea of we can't name sources, so how do we make sure the story is correct? Well, you have to have at least two independent unnamed sources.
Yeah.
And Deep Throat did not give information. That's widely misconceived. What he did was say to the reporter, reporters, you're going in the right direction, or you got it wrong, check here. He was a check.
Follow the money.
Yeah, right. He kept saying follow the money. So, and Woodworth, after Bradley died, said, his nightmare at the time was hearing in that gruff voice, you don't have it yet, kid, which too many editors don't say to reporters. They say, okay, fine, we'll go with it. And that's not the way you do great reporting.
Mm.
So.
Let's take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Williams College Museum of Art, featuring Citizen Band, a cinematic and immersive video installation by artist Angelica Massiti, opening celebration Friday at 6:30 p.m., wcma.williams.edu. And Ye Old Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we have a couple.
Yeah, Don Steiner, our regular correspondent, says, Ben Bradley was certainly more observant than Perry White, who could never figure out that Clark Kent was Superman with glasses.
And especially when his cape was hanging out the bottom of his jacket.
Yeah. Right. And then Michael says, Rosemary blaming this publisher for not asking to find out the source of those stories is rather hypocritical. Doesn't she always defend the right of a reporter to withhold their sources, Rosemary?
First, he wasn't a publisher. He was an editor. So it was directly his job to find out if the source was credible. And yes, I believe in protecting sources, but I bring my editor in as a cohort. He also agrees to it.
Excellent. Nicely done, Rosemary.
I think that's it. I think I could. Yeah.
Well, there's a difference. There's a distinct difference between being on the in a witness box and disclosing one's sources,
right,
and sharing it in a professional way, the way in terms of journalistic ethics,
right,
and veracity of story, right, with your editor.
Well, when someone says to you, oh, okay, I'll tell you, but this is off the record, I will always say, okay, but I am going to tell my editor. You know that, right? You do. You don't
really
keep it. Yeah,
for
absolutely.
For all the times I've said to people, this is off the record, no one's ever said that to me.
That's, you should ask about
ever,
it
ever.
Then. No, it's, and as an editor, if somebody came into, and mostly because of Janet Cook now, editors are you know, trained that if a reporter's saying to you, I can't tell you who my source is, it's fine, you don't have to, but we're not printing the story. You can't do it.
And I've always believed there is no such thing as off the record.
There is that. Or deep background.
Yeah. Let's talk about Leon Panetta real quick, clashing with the CIA over the contents of his recently published memoir. This is a Washington Post story. Allowed his publisher to begin editing and making copies of the book before he had received final approval from the CIA, according to the former U.S. officials. According to former U.S. officials and others familiar with the project, Panetta's decision appears to have put him in violation of the secrecy agreement that all CIA employees are required to sign, and came amid a showdown with agency reviewers that could have derailed the release of the book, according to people involved in the matter.
Well, it's interesting because the book is from, I have not read it, but the book, according to everybody who has read it, is a sort of love fest for the CIA. One wonders whether this kerfuffle would have occurred if it was with some, and it, as it has in the past, with somebody who's critical of the CIA, who used to work there. You know, this gets to be more and more, there's a whole part of our government that is totally secret that we don't know about. And as I've said a thousand times, you can't have democracy without having information. So we vote in elections, but we don't know what we're voting for, and we don't know whether the CIA, what the CIA is doing. And that is something that is very of great concern to me.
I agree wholeheartedly, oddly enough, uh-oh, Alan. I think you're right. I'm glad to see Panetta fighting back against this secrecy system that the CIA has in place. Who else but he could fight so well against a system that appears to tramp down on everything? You're right. It's a little love letter to the CIA. So what did they object to? It's so picky and minute. This is information that we should have. It shouldn't be that hard. And Panetta brought that out. I'm glad he did it.
And there's a lot more information we should have that we will never know about.
I agree.
The thing I have trouble with the story is that he has the power to go ahead with the publication. It seems to me that given the Penguin Press, which is now owned by Random House, Random House, which is the largest publishing entity in the entire world, would not have the ultimate say and lawyered that he would be the one to be able to pull the trigger on the printing and not a team of lawyers who are saying, do we have this approval before we can go ahead?
Wait, so, why does Random House – wait. Secrecy deal is between the person who worked for the CIA and the agency. The publishing house has nothing to do with it. We have the First Amendment. We don't have to agree to anything from the government before
What I'm saying is that he was going ahead and said – he was the one who was saying we can start printing the book now without getting all of the approval and understanding and as the review process was going through. Would it not be the publisher's in the publisher's interest to make sure that had all been reviewed?
Seems like they could have been
by,
sued
the,
by
CIA.
The CIA.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point.
But
well,
I don't know. Maybe it was a
– I mean, okay, since some of these other stories, you know, the books come out and they really go after – the author for the proceeds.
Right.
They're not going after the publishers.
It would be really hard to get the publishers with the First Amendment.
Sure,
yeah. That's
sure.
prior restraint.
Sure. Why doesn't the CIA
sue
the
publishers
and therefore expose all of the stuff that they're up to in some kind of a trial?
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's not
going to
happen.
Let's have a trial. Here's my discovery request.
All right, we'll leave it there for the moment. We'll take a break.
What phone was that you were tapping, sir?
And we'll be back with more. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning and welcome back to our Roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Now, when I say we welcome your comments, we really do. However, we're going to talk about a subject now, and I know you're going to write to us and
that
say
we're going to have lots of comments on.
Right, the people are going to say you shouldn't be talking about this. There's the election coming up. This is happening in Ukraine. There's
Ebola.
This happening. Ebola. Okay, look, we know that.
We all need a diversion.
But this is the story that is leading the front page of 90% of the newspapers in America. It is what has completely dominated the social media.
Right.
Now, you can argue of whether that's good or bad, which is partially what we're going to do this morning, but just save your letters, all right? Thank you very much. My plea to you, just give it a break for a minute, and just we're going to talk about this.
Okay, Joe, what is it? What are we going to talk about?
Renee Zellweger comes out on Monday and doesn't look anything like the Renee Zellweger that we have seen in the past. Virtually unrecognizable in many cases. So this has now become, I believe the word that Alan used earlier was a kerfuffle. And this is something that has dominated the headlines and because people are trying to figure out what was done or and then there's all the people saying it should have been done or shouldn't have been it should not have been done and what is she thinking and I bring it to the panel this morning. 45-year-old Oscar winner. She was incredibly famous woman who we assume she has not admitted to anything of having any cosmetic surgery whatsoever, but she has said, I'm glad folks think I look different. I'm living a different, happy, more fulfilling life, and I'm thrilled that perhaps it shows. Which tells us nothing.
Well, the other thing is that her name is on the front page or on the front website of every single media outlet, and she has been under the radar lately.
Yes. Right.
So it's increasing her profile. So, that could be part of it. I'm sure it is. But, the other part is she can never do another Bridget Jones movie.
It seems that way.
Be all thankful.
Oh, I love it too.
I love those. She's 45.
So Sarah Jessica Parker and the girls are going to do 45. Another Sex in the City.
Okay, but let's get right to it here.
Okay, fine, Alan.
Let's get right to it. The issue is, how many times have you walked down the street with somebody else, not yourself or yourself, and that somebody else turns around and says to you, out of the corner of her mouth, she's at work.
Every day.
She's at work.
Yeah. Every time I see John Kerry.
Every time I see John Kerry
on the TV, I'm like, he's had some work done.
So why is it that we Americans think that when somebody has work, that is more important than, as Joe said, Ebola or any of the other things?
It's not more important. It's interesting.
For some people,
and
it is.
No. It's not more important. Everyone would say Ebola and solving that problem is more important than fixing your face. But it is very interesting because you can do it. We could never do this before.
But a whole
new look. Good for her. I love it. I love Joan Rivers. I'm saving up money myself.
She couldn't move her face.
You know, you look at people like, because Joan Rivers came under a lot of fire because of the, I mean, obviously before her passing, but of concerns that it was too much. Mary Tyler Moore, you look at it and you say
bad plastic surgery.
Bruce Jenner, bad plastic surgery. Kenny Rogers, bad plastic surgery.
Mickey Rourke, really bad.
Okay.
I love those sites where they show before and after surgery gone wrong. I have to say I'm addicted to them.
But in this case, in my humble opinion, this seems like really, really, really good plastic surgery.
Great. She looks fabulous. And she does look completely different.
Who, Renee Zellweger?
So yeah. We always are talking about reinventing ourselves.
Yeah.
And so she's now a better looking, older woman. What's wrong with that? Is it that much different than doing your hair? Or dyeing your
hair. Well, it is. I mean, it's drastically.
It's a lot different.
I mean, it's
surgery. That's not true.
And, you know, people are going to South America because the prices are cheaper
Costa Rica.
So they go because it's you get a better deal on a new face.
Yeah, great. Great. I just think, and I'm sure we'll hear from plenty of people.
No.
I try to have outrage.
Just age gracefully.
No.
You know, I don't see.
Why? Fight the power.
But that's up to the individual. It's up to the individual man or woman to decide what they want to do. Whether they want to dye their hair or they don't want to dye their hair. Whether they want a nip here, a tuck there, fine. But it's up to them if it's safe. I think we were talking about this during the break. Obviously, there are a lot of surgical procedures which are way too dangerous and questionable, and that's different.
And sometimes it's important. Important that you do it for other reasons. For example, Ashley wrote us.
Yes.
And she said she had an eyelid condition that required surgery. Not saying that's all she did, but it's part of it and makes a significant impact on her appearance. I'm reading slowly because I got criticized for reading too fast.
Okay.
My hair was falling out at one point all through college and after that. And I had a cosmetic surgical procedure. I'm so glad I did. I do feel slightly guilty that it cost enough to feed several African villages for a month, but I'm glad I did it. So I don't see anything wrong with this.
I don't know, and so let's get to the point of then why we then make a big deal about it.
Because of how much people change the look. You're famous, and people have this image of Renee Zellweger from Jerry Maguire and Bridget Jones and Chicago. I mean, cute, vampy, sexy. Young.
Wince.
Right, you know, and now she looks totally different. So people, it's a shocker.
Well, there's something very Freudian.
A squint, right? Yeah,
It's the pouty, with the lips and the whole nine yards. I always thought it was a little strange, but
it's hard to pull that off at 45. So she got a new look to fit her years.
So just change your hair. Change the way you carry yourself.
Says who?
You know,
I'm with Rosemary on this, although I don't know that she's going to stick with it. But I think Freud. Let's go to Freud here.
All right.
What does Freud have to say?
The two major, as I understand them, the two major. I'm going to hear from every Michigan psychiatrist now.
Okay. how it goes, Michigan and psychiatrist?
Yeah, it does. Okay. So now the idea is that Freud said. On the one hand, you have Thanatos, the fear of death, and the other, you had love, you know? Mm-hmm. And in this culture of ours, you get more love if you look better.
And that's the problem.
And it also puts off the concept of fear of death. You see what I mean?
I do.
And that's why they do it.
I try to have outrage about this. As a feminist, I should be saying, as I know you do, all women should just accept their looks. But men do this too.
I'm not saying that men should just
accept
their looks.
But you could
looks.
If you wanted to.
I could and I should.
You know, what I'm saying
you
is...
You shouldn't. You don't have to. No one has to do this.
Okay, they're off on
People
their own.
People call me ugly all the time.
We have to have a serious conversation here.
Right. Alan.
What?
Pay attention.
We don't call you ugly.
Yeah, not to my face.
No, that's true.
Okay.
All right. But we love you. You know that,
ooh,
right?
Okay.
So, but anyway.
Okay.
Would you have, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Your face is known.
Yeah.
Would you have surgery to change your face?
Well, you know, I'm an identical twin.
I know you are.
So I've thought of it many times. I go in the airport, everybody yells, "Hiya, Louie." I said, "What?" I need to have a little distinction.
Yeah, okay. I just think we're so obsessed with youth and always looking youthful that there's a time when, you know, we are getting older. You know, it's just part of reality.
I'm not arguing with you on that fact, and I believe that that is the case. I would like to just bring it back to Renee Zellweger because I think that Rosemary's
really
point is well taken, is that I don't know that it's so much about youth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she looks like a beautiful 45-year-old woman.
She does. I wonder
what she looked like before. You know, I mean,
I'm sure.
I wonder what she looked like
I'll
at
save
40
you the
or 42.
Surgery done right.
Plastic
before
surgery
and after.
Gone
I'll send
wrong.
You the picture.
Yeah, but she was pretty before. So did something fall? Was there, you know, I mean.
Her eyelids, according to our correspondent.
Here's what I think really we should be paying attention to. This surgery is, it's possible, it's affordable, increasingly affordable. People are interested in it. Let's monitor it to make sure it's safe, which it many times has not been. And that there is a look for psychological counseling to make sure people aren't just trying to do stuff that can't be done.
Done? We're going to take a break. Alan has to go to an appointment, which is not with a plastic surgeon. And
It could be.
We don't know. He hasn't told us.
Well, we know you when you come back.
If I have a patch over my eye, you won't know me.
All you have to do is wait for the voice.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and continue. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting banjoists Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn this Friday at 8 p.m., Postmodern Jukebox, reworking 21st century pop hits into a variety of vintage styles this Saturday at 8 p.m., troymusichall.org. Springbrook, Oneonta, New York, supporting people of all ages with developmental disabilities, working in schools, in homes, and in communities across New York to help individuals achieve independence, springbrookny.org. And Taft Farms, Great Barrington, celebrating autumn with pick-your-own pumpkins, hay rides, corn maze, and children's hay maze, apples, bakery, and deli, hearty mums, gourds, plus locally grown pesticide-free produce, taftfarms.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We're having...
we're talking about hot stars who have had work.
It continues. See, this is what we were talking about, of how these stories take over.
Let's go to something more
serious.
Well, you know, that's the problem when you do a story like that. Then you have to go back to the serious stuff, and which is often difficult. So let me... we'll go to... a story that's, I guess, somewhat in between, which is a report showed that misdemeanor arrests for marijuana possession were about as frequent as last year, and the many involved openly displaying minuscule amounts of pot. This is from New York City. With a summons for marijuana possession to settle, this is... taking place in New York City. The mayor of New York... Mayor de Blasio had promised that marijuana arrests would decrease decline, and not bother the court systems and the prisons, and yet marijuana arrests persist in New York. This week, a report showed that such arrests were continuing at about the same pace as last year. The de Blasio administration had appreciably changed the number of such cases. Had not appreciably changed the number of cases. The Legal Aid Society has a roster of clients across the city who faced misdemeanor charges for possession of minuscule amounts of pot because it was charged. They were openly displaying the drug.
This is so stupid, it's not even funny. This speaks to the need to legalize marijuana. The guy in this story, it wasn't even, he was a passenger in a car. He didn't even know, according to him, that the pipe was there. It was a pipe that had already been smoked. There was residue in it, and he's lost his job. He's out thousands upon thousands of dollars in income because of this. It's insane, but it's not the only thing that de Blasio hasn't, fulfilled. The other big one that I keep tracking on is the Hansom cabs in Central Park. You know, he was all over the NYCLAS people, which is the group that's against the Hansom cabs because of the way the horses are treated. I'm going to be there. I'm going to make sure they're gone, blah, blah, blah. They're still trotting around Central Park. People are still getting busted for small bits of marijuana. When there are so many, you know, for this, there's so many other more important criminal issues that need to be dealt with.
It seems to me that the problem may also be with the police department, which hasn't gotten the memo that, hey, lay off on these kind of cases.
Well,
what a waste
listen.
Of time.
They too. don't listen.
Yeah, they're I admit, perhaps personally affronted by these sorts of offenses. But I do have a trouble. The New York Times wrote a story about this using a man who, a black man who had been stopped, as Libby explained. Don't give his real name, so I can't put a lot of faith in it. It could be embellished. We don't know. I don't know. It could be embellished. But at any rate, the idea is the same, is that these are minor offenses, if even an offense at all. And I agree, marijuana should be legalized. As for broken campaign promises, I guess de Blasio looked at Obama, who isn't Guantanamo still open?
Yes, it is, dear.
There we go.
Okay.
We got this letter from Ashley regarding the Washington Post discussion. Beyond questioning, the day of newspapers has changed drastically from what it was in the Watergate and Pentagon paper days and for centuries before that. There is a real question about whether and to what degree actual paper is a major and relevant factor in the newspaper business these days. However, it seems worthwhile to note that the role of long-established newspapers, including the Post, is not yet over when it comes to doing significant journalism. It seems to me that as much as things have changed, newspapers and in the Post in particular, in these instances, are still doing real, valuable, significant work that should be acknowledged.
Well, it sounds like it was written by a journalism professor. I wish that were true, but the fact is that it hasn't been centuries. It's only been one century that newspapers played that role as the investigative reporting, and much of it has gone away from newspapers and has not been picked up by other places yet. Some book authors and independent agencies are doing it now. But
people thought blogs and everything on the web was going to
They don't do it. There are some independent agencies that rely on funding from the Ford Foundation and the Knight Foundation, and that's very tenuous. So you should be worried about the fate of investigative reporting if you think it's important for democracy, like I do.
John writes, what about, this is about plastic surgery, what about the anthropological reasons that we find particular things attractive or unattractive? For example, hip size, or recent studies that show how quickly that we make decisions about whether someone is trustworthy or not based on things like the narrowness of their eyes or the depth of their cheekbones. How much of plastic surgery is just perpetuating a lie about who someone really is?
Oh, wow. Go back to that hip size stuff. Big is good or bad, or little is good?
I don't know.
Right back.
Inquiring minds want to
you
know.
You want proof on this?
I want to know the studies.
I think it has to do with personal preference, actually.
We thank you for that letter. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We go to another story in our 6 minutes left. Well, this is the story that we meant to, we were going to get to yesterday. Let's talk about the Ukraine,
oh, yeah.
And let's talk about the, we can start with the economy, but we can talk about other issues as well.
Right.
But we'll begin with the economy choking under Russian pressure, but Western help is scarce. With its war-torn economy threatened by further Russian disruptions, Ukraine is in desperate need of a new international financial aid package, economists say, but none appears imminent. What have they gotten themselves into?
When last we left Ukraine, here was the deal. Putin had moved in and in effect occupied the eastern part of the country and then said, okay, let's have peace. And what he is left with is he virtually owns eastern Ukraine, but not as part of the state that he has to pour money or effort into. He's just left it this impoverished, empty, it's kind of a no man's land, which is exactly what he wants. It destabilizes Ukraine. Meanwhile, Ukraine is dying because that's the coal-producing area of the country. They've lost that. They have continued to fight the war despite the ceasefire that's in effect. And that's cost money they don't have, an effort they don't have. There are reports from human rights groups that they're using cluster bombs, which many states, but not Ukraine or the United States or Russia, have agreed not to use to fight this battle.
That was the story we were going to talk about yesterday.
Yeah,
right?
We were going to talk about that. And then the other part of this is that Russia also is under incredible financial economic pressure. There are sanctions from the West, and now the price of oil has really gone down. CNN was reporting that the cost right now is $30 a barrel beneath what Russia needs to break even. So both of these countries are in really bad financial shape, and yet they're still fighting this war. The other interesting story is that Polish officials have come out and said, oh yeah, Putin came to us and said, let's make a deal here. We'll just split up Ukraine between us. And the Poles said, no, we're not interested. But it does give some insight into what Putin may be thinking.
Well, it's interesting that he seems to be losing his iron grip. And that I wonder how much does the sanctions that we imposed
played a big role.
Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, it played a big role. I know the United States took a lot of criticism, including from me, for not doing more, for not marching in the way we did on ISIS in the Middle East. But the economic sanctions, and there are more that can be made, does have an effect on countries like Russia that are, you know, run by a totalitarian mm-hmm. state and with collusion with economic interests, almost mafia. Alike.
Well, the oligarchs.
That's right. So there's more that can be done. Oil is really interesting. And the United States and the West could really play a role in this by giving aid, economic aid to Ukraine.
So in a minute and a half, what will the parliamentary elections bring, do you think?
In the parliamentary elections in Ukraine?
Yeah.
I think more stability, more...
October 26th.
Yeah, October 26th. More, more legitimacy to the independent government of Ukraine, and perhaps, I hope, more money from the West. That's what's really needed.
I want to thank everybody for joining us this morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. What'd you say?
That was like a history lesson. Sorry.
Oh, that was good.
Well, you know,
but
what's really interesting about it is that there are so many of us who wanted immediate action. You know, something has to be done immediately. Obama
right.
took the long view and knowing
right.
that economics can really make a difference here. And we see that that's happening. It just didn't happen over the summer.
Excellent. Yeah, it's true.
And some things
take time.
Take time.
People want everything tomorrow,
right.
or today, and it just doesn't happen.
If you're going to have surgery, it's going to take time.
It does. Everything's got the swelling has to go down.
The bruising.
Before you can take to that red carpet.
That's the other thing. Why would anybody go through that? So, but that's another story for another day.
And
we
will suffer to be beautiful.
And
didn't
we will
your
have that.
Ever tell you that.
No, because my mother was already beautiful, and she never suffered like that.
Libby, Rosemary, thank you very much. We'll
Alan,
be back tomorrow. Alan will be back as well. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.